This episode of Intelligent Medicine is brought to you by the next big thing in anti-inflammatory supplements, a brand new all-natural daily preventative against a host of possible inflammatory issues. Black for Health liquid extract from Future Farm Botanicals. Black for Health combines four plant-based foods, black garlic, black radish root, black cumin seed, and black peppercorn, containing high levels of body-ready healing botanicals. Black for Health supports your liver, skin, cholesterol, blood pressure, and weight management, circulation, and immunity. It's a tasty supplement with liposome complex for optimal absorption. For more information and to order, call 888-841-7216, 888-841-7216, or go to myfuturefarm.com/Hoffman. That's myfuture, P-H-A-R-M, myfuturefarm.com/Hoffman. Welcome to today's Intelligent Medicine Podcast. I'm your host, Dr. Ronald Hoffman. It's our weekly Q&A with Layla, which I look very much forward to each week, and I hope that you do too. Judging from comments, it's one of our more popular segments among our podcasts. With me is Layla Mudin, who is our nutritionist in residence, and together we field questions that are sent to us via, write this down, radioprogram@AOL.com. That's the destination for questions about all and sundry. We put it under the rubric of intelligent medicine, the best of high-tech medicine, the best of natural therapies. Put those all together for you each time we do a podcast. So, Layla, it's kind of a boring health week, right? Not much happening on the health front.
Oh, you mean about the president?
Yeah. October surprise.
October surprise.
Yeah.
As long as that doesn't happen in the stock market, but it's still early. Oh, boy.
Yeah, well, you know, this may be just one among many surprises that are going to happen this month.
Right.
Okay, so Trump got sick, you know, got well, ripped off his mask, proclaimed that he hasn't felt better in 20 years. Mm. But it, of interest is that in the Wall Street Journal, there's, I mean, I never thought it's, is this like, you know, April Fool's Day? Wall Street Journal headline, Trump takes zinc. Maybe you should too.
Ah.
This is in the opinion section of the Wall Street Journal.
Okay.
It's not by a doctor. It's by Alicia Finley, who's on the editorial board of the Wall Street Journal. Some interesting stuff in there. Research today suggests the mineral bolsters the immune system against COVID and other diseases. You know, he got a bunch of stuff. He got remdesivir. He got, you know, experimental polyclonal antibodies, which are, you know, the hot new ticket in terms of building up the immune system. He got
some steroids.
Famotidine, some steroids.
Yeah.
Famotidine is an over-the-counter ulcer medication, but it was also noted in the press release by Kayleigh McEnany, who, by the way, turned out to be positive for COVID-19.
Yeah.
But in her press release, when he went into the hospital, he said, well, this is his regimen. He's taking remdesivir, and he's taking polyclonal antibodies, and he's taking famotidine, and he's taking zinc and vitamin D and melatonin and vitamin C, as if it was the most natural thing in the world.
Wow.
So, yeah.
Hello.
Interesting new study. Last month, researchers from Spain reported that patients who died in hospitals, they got very hard hit in Spain. There were like it went like through Spain like a scythe, Spain and Italy.
Yeah.
The ones who died in hospitals in March and April, on average, had zinc blood levels of 43. A level of 70 is considered normal.
Wow.
And
very low zinc levels they had.
Among the survivors, the average level was 63. So they still didn't have a normal level. They had closer to a normal level. And those that discriminated between the those who died and the survivors.
Yeah.
For each unit increase of zinc in the blood, it was associated with a 7% lower likelihood of dying. So she comments, that's huge. Severe zinc deficiency depresses immune function. They also believe that one of the keys to the success of hydroxychloroquine is that it's an ionophore.
Ionophore. Helps it.
It's like a shuttle, which helps the zinc get to where it needs to get to in the cell.
Huh. Interesting.
So, you know, there's another study they cite in the Wall Street Journal. Clinical trial, 1998,
those who received a multivitamin supplement that contained 50% of the recommended intake of zinc, they were 40% less likely to die from any cause in a nursing home. The incidence of pneumonia was 50% lower during the trial.
Those numbers are significant.
Yeah. Very nice.
That's really something.
So
that's
again,
very encouraging.
Yeah, it suggests that, I mean, some of these things were considered witchcraft and heresy in the beginning.
Oh,
you know?
I know.
Doctors were getting tagged for, putting up unfounded, unsubstantiated information about the benefits of supplements. And yet here we now have supplements on center stage.
Exactly. What do you think is happening here? I love that this was written up in the Wall Street Journal by somebody on the editorial board.
In one word, truth.
Yay,
you know, truth ultimately triumphs.
Yes.
And in science.
Yeah.
And, you know, in spite of the fact that there's tremendous built-in bias against supplements and we're looking for these fancy schmancy medications.
Yeah.
And look, let's not minimize the potential benefits of the medications because he seems to have
absolutely.
He's done
sure.
well. Can we attribute it to the supplements entirely? But it was part of the equation.
Definitely. Part
also,
of the equation, right.
I dug up, he's on melatonin, which is a little unusual.
Yeah.
I dug up a study about melatonin and COVID-19, which just came out on October 2nd.
Mm-hmm.
And it's a review, a scientific review, in Virus Research, which is a, you know, technical journal, scientific journal. It's entitled Melatonin Potentials Against Viral Infections, Including COVID-19, Current Evidence and New Findings. And what they kind of summarize all the information about melatonin against various other types of viral illnesses. And then they focus on COVID-19. And something about COVID-19, there are these what are called ACE2 inhibitors.
Uh-huh.
I'm sorry, ACE2 receptors.
Okay.
Which are like the docking sites. It's how the virus attaches to cells.
Mm-hmm.
And it appears that melatonin may do something to minimize the docking capability of the virus onto the cell surface.
It disrupts it. Wow.
Yeah. Yeah. It's a good. It's a bit of a blocker.
Mm-hmm.
So, if you want, I can read the entire 54 pages to you of the study, but I think it's
I don't think we have time.
Yeah. It's kind of a deep dive, so let's just suffice it to say there's some evidence that melatonin may, at least in theory, prove beneficial against many viruses and perhaps melatonin against COVID-19. So kind of cool.
That's fascinating. We know that melatonin is not just fabulous for sleep for anybody suffering from insomnia, but it's also a very important antioxidant. And I know in the context of cancer that you normally recommend much higher doses of melatonin than the standard amount of, say, 1 milligram or up to 5 milligrams per evening for sleep. I wonder how much melatonin they had Trump take.
Yeah, I mean, our cancer dose is very high. It's 20.
Yeah.
But I think most people agree that a modest dose, like 2.5 or 3,
mm-hmm.
is an adequate dose for this.
Yeah.
And
for this in the setting. Yeah, yeah. Because it's interesting. We're talking about a man, President Trump, who gets maybe 4 hours
sleep
on average. Yeah. But for many, 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 many years,
right,
he's that
right.
driven.
Right.
You know, you could tell by the tweet, the last tweet is at midnight and the next tweet is somewhere around 6 a.m. or so. It's like, wow.
When does
you're not
sleep?
Sleeping much.
And they said yeah. something interesting. They said he must have been really under the weather because he was on Air Force One and he fell asleep. They said, that's very unusual. Like, you know, if I'm like on a hectic schedule like that, I take a nap. You
totally.
Know? And I'm like, you
totally.
Know, like a lot younger.
And when you're bogged down with a virus, whether it's a cold virus or a flu or something like this, you're tired.
Yeah.
You're tired.
So, so anyway, that is encouraging.
Wow.
And so, you know, starting the week off on an interesting note.
Honestly. And now that we're going back into cold and flu season, it's October after all, and people are worried or concerned. How do I know if I have a cold or a flu or COVID-19?
Right.
Hmm.
You know, I have another interesting one that's just top of the news today.
Mm-hmm.
It was just released this morning. And it is something called the Great Barrington Declaration. Now, I think, I don't know why they call it that. Barrington is a place in Massachusetts, I think. But it is a declaration by scientists and health professionals, which is basically saying that we need to cool it with the lockdown. That, yes, the virus is very serious, but mm-hmm. the consequences of a complete lockdown and sequestration mm-hmm. of the population and bringing the economy to a halt outweigh the negative consequences of the virus. And these scientists basically are saying, you know, a little bit of what Trump is saying is that, you know, this is a survivable condition. We've promoted mass paranoia and fear about this.
Oh yeah, and that's continuing to happen in the media.
Oh, it's getting worse.
Yeah,
it's getting worse. Partially, yeah. it's
a fever pitch.
Well,
really.
Look, Trump's illness has, I think, accentuated the concern here. There are pockets in New York where there's more infection.
Yeah,
you know, they want to, you know, shut down certain neighborhoods.
Well, here's the thing: here in New York, there are now more cases.
Yes.
Nobody's talking about deaths anymore.
Yeah.
So is this a pandemic or a case-demic?
And that was actually the title of a podcast that I did recently with Dr. Robert Furkirk. He's this brilliant guy who's head of the Alliance for Natural Health in England. It's an international organization. And, you know, the UK is dealing with this too, and there's lots of controversy.
Yeah.
They want to, you know, go back to some of the things that they enacted last spring. And, you know, many people are saying that is excessive.
Mm-hmm.
So they say in this declaration, among, you know, other things, they say adopting measures to protect the vulnerable should be the central aim of public health responses to COVID-19.
Sure.
Nursing homes, et cetera, et cetera.
Mm-hmm.
They say those who are not vulnerable should be immediately allowed to resume life as normal.
Yeah.
Simple hygiene measures such as hand washing and staying home when sick should be practiced by everyone to reduce the herd immunity threshold.
Right.
They want schools and universities to be open.
Yes.
For in-person teaching and extracurricular activities.
In many places in Europe, their schools were open in June.
Yep.
May.
You know, and it's also a matter of personal choice. People who are more at risk may participate if they wish.
Yeah.
While society as a whole enjoys the protection conferred upon the vulnerable by those who build up herd immunity. And this herd immunity thing is very controversial because we obviously haven't reached the threshold of herd immunity, but there may be various degrees of herd immunity without mm-hmm. reaching that formal threshold of 60 to 70% of the population has to have had it.
Mm.
We now believe that, you know, worldwide, maybe 10% of the population has had it. Certain hotspots, maybe it's 25 or more. But that's not herd immunity yet. And yet, there still seems to be less rampant spread.
Yes. And the virus has become less powerful.
It's become attenuated, possibly.
Yeah.
Possibly. Yeah.
So it's changing.
There's a lot. Look, there's a lot we don't know about this. But, you know, it's interesting that there's a movement afoot by, you know, really responsible health professionals to sign this Great Barrington Declaration. And it's going to, I mean, so far, I haven't signed it yet, but 3,600 medical and public health scientists have signed it. Over 6,000 medical practitioners have signed it.
Terrific.
And nearly 90,000, it's only been out for a few hours, actually. 90,000 people in the general public have signed it.
And that many people have already signed
it. Yeah, it's...
Advising against another lockdown.
Yeah.
Good.
Yeah. Basically, you know, reasonable precautions, which I'm all for, but, you know, we really feel it here in New York because a lot of the restaurants are going belly up. A lot of the stores are you know, failing.
Yes.
And a lot of people are in the service industry out of work. Broadway is shut down. You know, maybe it's not the time to resume, you know, full on, you know, close proximity indoor entertainment, like Broadway shows and things. But, you know, gradually I think we need to start, you know, moving up on the timetable of
definitely
reopening.
Yeah.
So anyway, that's interesting. This stuff is in the context of a political election where this has become a big issue. It's almost like, you know, one party as the letter rip party and the other party is the lockdown party. And, you know, I think neither polar view is the proper nuanced approach to this.
Yeah. What I find most encouraging, Dr. Hoffman, is that the rate of death has gone down.
Right, yes.
I think outstanding.
No question. Yeah. The hospitals are not overwhelmed.
No, they're not.
So we are seeing more cases. People are getting sick, but they're generally weathering it pretty well.
Yeah.
Unless they have high vulnerability.
Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah. All right.
So anyway, enough of the news. Let's hear. Okay, so radio program. It's coming fast and furious.
Yeah.
It's almost a day doesn't go by without some really astonishing health news.
That's true. We have an email from Harry. Hi, Dr. Hoffman and Layla. My father is 77 years old. He's struggling to maintain his weight. Initially, he was trying to lose weight. The weight loss was intentional. And that was fine, but then he had diarrhea for about 4 months and lost even more weight. But then the diarrhea stopped, but he's having trouble regaining weight. Altogether, he's lost about 20 to 40 pounds. His blood work is normal. He's been checked out. He doesn't think that it may be anything serious. But Dr. Hoffman, do you think that...
Does he had a colonoscopy? I don't know what the workup has been.
We don't know. His blood work is normal, doesn't take prescriptions, but his son, Harry, is wondering if his father might have parasites.
Well, that's a possibility. Stool tests should reveal the presence of parasites.
Yeah.
He would need
that kind of a workup, exactly.
Needs a workup.
Especially diarrhea for 4 months.
But, let's look at the possible causes of weight loss in an older male.
Yeah.
How old is the gentleman? 77. So it's not uncommon for men to lose weight around that time. They develop frailty. Mm-hmm. And some of that is age-related, simply because we're programmed to get more frail. Yeah. But some of that may be due to a decline in testosterone or DHEA, which can be mm-hmm. checked. And these androgens can be prescribed, judiciously. Making sure the person doesn't have a hormone responsive cancer.
Yeah.
Also, the first thing you do when you see a patient who has unexplained weight loss and change in bowel habits, you do a colonoscopy. They could have colitis. They could have cancer.
Yeah.
They could have parasites indeed. Mm-hmm. And when you do a colonoscopy, you can get a stool sample. You can see what's going on there. Yeah.
It would require a workup, right.
Yeah. The other possibility is, celiac disease can develop late in life.
Oh, that's true. That would be another reason for weight. We've seen presentations of celiac disease in people in their 70s.
Mm-hmm.
Strangely enough, it's like, why would this happen now?
Right.
A terrific example. My mother, who's just turned 84, was only 2 years ago diagnosed with Graves' disease.
Oh, okay. That's another cause of weight loss, by the way.
Yeah, yes. She was losing weight, so we were concerned.
It's a hypermetabolic state. Just as people who are overweight, they say, could it be my thyroid, like a sluggish thyroid? An overactive thyroid can sometimes cause this.
You go into overdrive.
So what you have here is kind of the way doctors are presented with a case.
Mm-hmm.
The case presents in a certain way. There's a certain fact pattern. And then you go through the differential diagnosis.
Mm-hmm.
And then you rule out each of these with appropriate tests and evaluations.
Mm-hmm.
At the end of the day, hopefully you arrive at a targeted approach to this.
Mm-hmm.
The other thing is, frankly, sometimes people, when they lose weight, they get off a certain diet and they go on a very high fiber, like a kick where they're eating tons of salad or something in an effort to eat light.
Uh-huh.
And, maybe his GI tract is not tolerating that too well.
Could be, yeah. So, Harry, your father needs a workup, right?
Yeah.
And thank you for that question.
And that's what we do in real life. This is just, we pretend to be podcasters. That's a hobby.
But this is a hobby.
Our day job is we see patients.
Right. We have an email from Sean. I've been trying to research alternative treatment for my sister who has schizophrenia.
Mm.
And as I've been checking, I came across Dr. Abram Hoffer and his work with niacin and other vitamins as a regimen for schizophrenia. And this led me to the title Orthomolecular Therapy.
Mm-hmm.
Am I on the right track? Is this something that can help my sister with schizophrenia?
Well,
I want to stay away from conventional medicine.
Yeah, and treatment of schizophrenia, there are a lot of side effects with medications.
Mm-hmm.
So, yes, obviously we would prefer a natural approach. You know, so to kind of illustrate this, you know, let me tell you briefly about a case that I personally saw that influenced me very greatly early in my career. This must have happened in the late 80s or early 90s, where I saw a guy who was a subway token taker. And this is before automated, you know, turnstiles. There was a guy in a glass booth, and it was one of the grimmest jobs in the world because you were underground all day, and, you know, surly people threw money at you and you gave them tokens.
Right.
Or they asked for directions, or they complained about something that, the trains weren't running.
When's the train going to start running again?
Yeah, what happened to the E train? I've been waiting, you know. So, you know, kind of a stressful job. Not the most uplifting job. But anyway, he came to me and I immediately got the impression that he was suffering from psychosis. I mean, he was very halting in his speech. He was like, had these grandiose ideas that he was like, you know, the Messiah incarnate. There was sort of religious imagery. And he reported, frankly, hallucinations. He was getting auditory hallucinations, commands, and things like that. And I said, okay. So I made a mental note that this is a guy who probably is going to need some medication. This is beyond the scope of nutrition. But, you know, because I was a famous nutritionist, he came to see me. And he, you know, wanted a nutritional approach to this. So, you know, I asked him some questions about his diet, and he, for some reason, he was on a very eccentric diet. He was on, like, a raw foods vegan diet. So I said, you know, you need some protein. You need your diet is calorically insufficient. You're basically running on fumes. And I, you know, I gave him the advice, and I said, you know, put reincorporate some protein and animal protein in your diet. You know, have some more cooked foods. Don't eat, just eat salads and sprouts and tofu.
And raw tofu.
And then I said, and I want you to see this doctor. And I gave him a little prescription pad. And I said, this is the name of the doctor I want you to see, who was a colleague of mine who was a psychiatrist.
Okay.
And so, and then I called, to make sure I called the psychiatrist, I have this guy for you. And he says, yeah, it sounds like florid schizophrenia. I'll see this guy whenever he calls. And I'll let you know what I think. So, like, I wait and I wait. A couple of weeks later, I get a call from the psychiatrist. And so he says, well, I saw your patient. And I said, so what did you put him on? Because I thought, you know, he needs medication. He said, I didn't put him on anything. I said, why? He said, well, you'll be very surprised to see what a dramatic turnaround he made. Because to my mind, he sounded relatively normal. I mean, he's a little bit of an eccentric person, but he is not clinically schizophrenic. And what ended up happening is the guy did very well off of medication, you know, taking certain supplements, changing his diet, and, you know, he kind of normalized. So in light of that, I just looked this up. The subject was ketogenic diet for schizophrenia. And there is an article in the latest issue of Psychology Today, or recent issue anyway, which is entitled Chronic Schizophrenia Put into Remission Without Medication. And it's a series of case studies of people who were put on a ketogenic diet, which is no carbs.
Right.
And the idea being that the brain uses fat for fuel more efficiently than carbs for fuel. And ups and downs of blood sugar can make you kind of nutty. You know?
It can.
So new research suggests ketogenic diet may play a role in treating schizophrenia. The article appeared in Schizophrenia Research in 2019, blah, 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 blah. So, you know, there is definitely a potential for diet to help. Now, Abram Hoffer is a guy who kind of is in the annals of orthomolecular medicine, is considered like one of the fathers of orthomolecular medicine. He and Dr. Carl Pfeiffer, who had the Princeton BioBrain Center, and I think he might have started in the 60s and 70s and 80s. And that's when he that was in its heyday. And they treated all kinds of patients with mental problems with vitamins and supplements and diet change. And Hoffer's protocol relied a lot on niacin. You know, that's a little bit of a one-note Charlie on schizophrenia. I think there's more
it's
to it than
B3,
that.
Yeah,
it could really work because, you know,
high doses of it, though.
Symptoms of vitamin B3 deficiency include mental disorders.
Yes.
So it's what, pelagra, you know, is
right, you know, right. Is, the four D's, diarrhea, delirium,
dermatitis,
and then death.
And then death.
Right.
Very good. You remember your nutrition.
Yeah.
You study that in when you get your master's in nutrition.
Right.
No, possibly high doses are required for some people to straighten them out. You know, it works sometimes. It's not like a magic bullet for schizophrenia. Mm-hmm. So this guy has just sort of stumbled upon orthomolecular medicine as potential. And, you know, we would look at, you know, patients with schizophrenia. Right. We'd look at nutritional deficiencies.
Yeah.
And, you know, we also believe that essential fatty acids are very important.
Yes.
So, omega-3s might be helpful.
Sure. Another thing that occurs to me, we have a couple of case studies of where the patient was presenting with schizophrenia and you checked for celiac disease.
Ah, bingo.
Right. So right there were a couple of cases where
affects the brain.
The removal of gluten made all the difference in the world.
Yeah.
So, and that was clearly something. Most people with gluten intolerance, severe gluten intolerance, or celiac disease believe that they would just have GI symptoms and nothing else. It's not just about diarrhea or stomach.
Yeah, they don't
have
to look like a concentration camp survivor.
No, they could actually be overweight, in fact. They're not necessarily losing weight. But they could have other symptoms like neuropathies, pain tingling in the extremities, ataxia. Nerve problems. And psychiatric problems, as it turns out. Yep. So I find that all very fascinating.
Yeah, so, I mean, look, let's put it this way. In treatment of schizophrenia, there is a nutritional perspective.
Yeah.
But, you know, I have to say that among the patients that we have who are schizophrenic, we're not too many, because I don't specialize in this, and I don't, I don't accept
we
that many patients with florid schizophrenia. I mean, we have a few in our practice. I sometimes refer out to nutritionally oriented psychiatrists.
Yeah.
But, because they can prescribe medication, and they know how to, and which is very specialized. The type of medication they use in schizophrenia is very, you know, very, that's niched kind of prescribing. But
some terrible side effects to many of those antipsychotics, like Parkinson's type.
Parkinsonian symptoms, tardive dyskinesia, but also a tremendous amount of weight gain.
Oh, yeah.
And these patients are very unhealthy. You know, they tend to crave sweets and carbs.
Oh,
and
lots of candy bars, 2 liters of soda a
day. The medication makes it worse.
Yes, the medication really causes craving and then eventually diabetes.
Yep.
Right.
But you know, among the patients we have a couple of high-functioning schizophrenics. I mean, they've been schizophrenic in the past. They hold down jobs. You know, they seem to be stable.
And have normal lives.
Yeah. Productive lives.
Yeah.
So it's doable.
So, Sean, your sister needs a workup. The answer to everything is you need a workup. she would need to be checked for all of that. Wow.
Well, believe it or not, it is time to break because we divide our podcast into two parts.
My goodness.
Time flies when you're having fun, and we'll be back with more in part two. So give us a preview of what questions we'll be fielding in part two.
What is the correct dose I should take of vitamin C and vitamin D to boost my immunity?
Oh, okay. Mm. We'll target that question when we return. I'm Dr. Ronald Hoffman, today with Layla Mudin, who is our nutritionist in residence, radio program at AOL.com, the destination for questions. Email us with your clinical dilemmas. We'll be right back.